This is a CBC podcast. From Dragon's Den to Hockey Night in Canada, you can watch full episodes of your favorite shows from CBC Television whenever you want. Just head to cbc.ca/video.
On September 15th, 1967, The Who performed an historic set on the Smothers Brothers Comedy Hour TV show. It was historic because of the song, My Generation. The Who were not polite like the well-scrubbed Beatles, and you can hear their sneers when Tommy Smothers tries to introduce them.
You guys are really too much, and I want to introduce you to the guys individually in The Who, because you never get to know their names. You know them as The Who. Everybody says, Who? And you say, you know. What's your name?
Pete.
Pete. Pete. Yeah. Pete, and where are you from, Pete?
London.
From London?
Yeah.
London where?
London, England.
Hey, where'd you learn to play, you know, that's a wild style of playing. Where'd you learn to play the guitar like that?
That was bowling.
Bowling.
Then, the band launches into My Generation. As everyone knows, The Who had a unique way of ending their performances. They would destroy all of their equipment in a violent storm of bashing amplifiers, feet kicking holes in speakers, guitars being smashed on the ground, and drums being, well, blown up. Drummer Keith Moon was a big fan of explosives. One of his favorite calling cards was to flush powerful explosives down hotel toilets, which led him to be banned from several large hotel chains around the world. On the Smothers Brothers show that night, a small amount of explosive was put into a miniature cannon that Moon kept in his bass drum, but it didn't go off during the rehearsal. Unbeknownst to Keith Moon, the stagehand put another explosive in it, and later, Keith Moon put yet another explosive in it, for a total of three instead of one. So when The Who came to the end of My Generation and started destroying their instruments, suddenly there was a tremendous explosion caught on tape. You can see singer Roger Daltrey jump back in sheer fright. There is smoke everywhere, and out of that smoke wanders a disoriented Pete Townsend. He is patting a flame out in his hair, and he is rubbing his ear. The unexpected sound of that explosion would rob him of something very important in his profession, his hearing. He lost a substantial part of his ability to hear in one ear that night, and it would begin a gradual disintegration of his hearing that would haunt him his entire life. Our ability to hear is arguably our greatest sense. Even in caveman days, we could hear a saber-toothed lion before we could see it. It has been our 24-hour early warning system throughout history. Sound is a powerful force in our lives, and marketers have known this since the turn of the 20th century. Even going back to the early days of radio, sound has been an influential marketing strategy. My name is Terry O'Reilly. Lend me your ears as we listen for the many ways marketers have used sound, not just to paint pictures on radio, but as a powerful selling tool. You may just discover that a lot of the marketing you hear goes in one ear and stays there in the age of persuasion.
Hello, ladies.
Tacos, fettuccine, linguine, martini, bikini.
Wow, what's that aftershave you're wearing?
Cough suppressant as effective as codeine, but not narcotic.
It'll keep your kids quiet for hours.
Tonight's episode brought to you by...
I'll never blow my horn again.
Alka-Seltzer for sound orchestration.
And now, Terry O'Reilly and the Age of Persuasion.
We are not afraid to get mavericky in there.
Thank you for your support.
Sound is immensely powerful in our lives. As audio specialist Julian Treasure notes, hearing develops just 12 weeks after conception. Long before we have ears, we are hearing our mother's heartbeat through every cell. Even as adults, we hear through our whole bodies. Ears are just the specialists. We sense sound through our skin, bone, and muscle. Hearing is the first sense we create, and according to numerous near-death accounts, it's also the last sense to dim when we die. The reason that races start with a pistol shot and not a burst of light, for example, is that the body reacts much more quickly to sound. Our ears are always on guard. With sight, we see about 180 degrees and around 120 feet high. But hearing is completely 360 degrees spherical. Normal human beings can precisely place a sound in three dimensions. We have no deaf spot because hearing is our primary warning sense. It is on duty from birth to death with no rest at all. We close our eyes to sleep, but our hearing carries on. Even when we are dreaming, our hearing is constantly scanning and analyzing the sounds around us as protection. It's why we can be bolted from sleep by the slightest noise. As a result of this highly refined sense, it is very difficult to trick people with sound. That's why there are very few oral illusions, yet there are endless optical ones. The average human ear can discern over 1,300 barely noticeable differences in tone, but we can only see 150 hues of color. Using this scale, ears are 100 times more sensitive than eyes. It's no surprise, then, that sound is such a powerful part of marketing. It can inspire desire and remind you of a brand instantly when you hear a cue. You can listen to a commercial from around a corner even when you can't see it, and sound can make your mouth water, all of which is highly desirable to marketers. I have spent nearly my entire career in the sound business. I spend a lot of time thinking about sounds in commercials, how to create them, which ones to carefully choose, what response they elicit, and which sound effects are the best to create or enhance a brand. In our very first season, we did an episode that talked about how radio can create wonderful pictures with sound. But sound can also persuade. Marketers have long used sound and sound effects in advertising, having learned important lessons way back in the early days of motion pictures and radio. When I went searching for the earliest examples of recorded sounds, it was amazing what was available. In 1860, a French inventor recorded a folk song titled Au Clair de la Lune, using what he called a phonoautographer. Seventeen years later, Edison created and patented the cylinder phonograph. He made a sketch of the machine, as he imagined it, and gave it to his mechanic John Cruessi, who apparently built it in 30 hours. Edison immediately tested the machine and chose a nursery rhyme as his first words. He recorded it and, to his amazement, the machine played it back to him.
Mary had a little lamb, its fleece was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Edison then experimented with synchronizing recorded sound to moving pictures. He invented something he called the kinetophone in 1884. A film was made by William Dixon using Edison's invention and was thought to have been lost for over 80 years. Then, in 1964, the broken cylinder was discovered, and in 1998, the cylinder was repaired. Here it is, and if you listen closely, you can hear someone say, "Are the rest of you ready? Go ahead." The film shows a man playing a violin into a huge cylinder, while two men dance nearby. Total time? 17 seconds. But history was made. In 1925, there was Gus Visor and his singing duck.
Oh my, he is an eagle, hey, that's me. He is a full nice to me. Oh, he is almost breaking my heart. I am beside him. Merciless conscience guide him. He wants to marry me and be my honeybee.
I do not want to know how he made the duck quack. When you see the footage on our website, you'll know what I mean. Everything you just heard predated The Jazz Singer starring Al Jolson, which is famously thought to be the first talkie. It wasn't, but it was indeed the first mass-marketed feature-length film that incorporated singing and synchronized speech. When silent film actors suddenly could be heard, it killed some careers and ignited others. One thing it proved, the power of sound couldn't be denied. As sound became a permanent part of the movies, Madison Avenue began to wake up to its huge potential. As a BBDO advertising executive said in 1935, with the advent of radio, never before in history had 50 million people listened to the same sound at exactly the same time. And above all, it was a persuasive selling tool that could make the invisible visible. My name is Terry O'Reilly, and you're listening to The Age of Persuasion. So advertisers began to use sound to embed brands in people's minds. And through the ensuing decades, advertising has experimented with using sound to persuade. Many hours have been spent in boardrooms and recording studios trying to decide which sounds create the most desire, and which ones are the most memorable, and which most perfectly capture the essence of a product. The use of sound as a selling tool goes back a long way in the history of advertising. In 1939, for example, Old Dutch Cleanser was running radio commercials. They described how Old Dutch cleaned sinks, pots, and pans better than any other cleanser. The reason was because Old Dutch contained an ingredient that cleaned and polished surfaces without scratching.
When Mrs. Irving Cruz of 2000 Greenleaf Avenue, Chicago, watched the coin test, she said, quote, "It's amazing to see the difference in cleansers. The coin moves so smoothly over the Old Dutch. Of course, my experience bears out the results of the coin test. I've used Old Dutch for years and know it doesn't scratch," unquote.
But how do you prove a visual promise on radio? Old Dutch used a coin test. Two glasses were used, the first sprinkled with a leading cleanser, the second with Old Dutch. Then a coin was placed on the first glass and moved in a slow, circular motion. And this is what listeners heard.
"Take a piece of glass and sprinkle a little cleanser on it. Then rub a coin over the cleanser. Listen. That grinding and grating sound is your warning that this cleanser contains scratchy particles that will mar surfaces, making them harder to keep clean, more work for you."
But when the coin was used on the Old Dutch glass, the listeners heard,
"Now, hear the big difference when we make the same test with Old Dutch. There is no unpleasant scratching sound because Old Dutch is made with seismatite, and the coin moves smoothly over the flaky, flat-shaped particles. So your Old Dutch not only saves surfaces, it saves you time and work, too."
It was a mighty persuasive sound, or should I say, non-sound, and Old Dutch became the choice of housewives everywhere. Maxwell House Coffee harnessed sound to sell their product. The smell of fresh brewed coffee was a powerful selling tool, but it was impossible to employ on radio and television. So Maxwell House used the sound of brewing coffee to stimulate the smell in people's minds.
"This is the coffee pot at work. Listen to it perk. Look at the coffee as it gets darker and stronger. Smell the honest coffee smell. Ah, smell it. But will this cup of coffee taste as good as it smells? You bet it will, because it's Maxwell House, the coffee that tastes as good as it smells every time."
Alka-Seltzer was another brand that persuaded through sound. I suspect this spot wasn't so much about the Christmas holidays as it was about hangovers.
"This is Ken Nardine. When you check off that last item on your Christmas shopping list, it's a big relief to know that all your shopping's done. But before you do tear up that list, be sure you've bought some Alka-Seltzer. You don't want a headache, upset stomach, or general achiness to spoil your holiday fun.
Now listen to the section of the commercial when they drop the Alka-Seltzer tablets into a glass of water. The sound is meant to brand the product as unique.
Then just drop one or two tablets into a glass of water like this. Listen to it fizz. That's Alka-Seltzer changing into a sparkling liquid for relief.
Later, that fizz became plop plop fizz fizz, oh what a relief it is, which in itself became an audio cue to remind you of Alka-Seltzer's unique properties. Here's a commercial where Sammy Davis Jr. takes over the sound effect duties.
I'll never blow my horn again. This pizza, the noise, the stew, my head is turning, my stomach is churning. Oh, Sam, what can I do?
When you eat and play beyond moderation, you need Alka-Seltzer for sound orchestration. Alka-Seltzer speeds relief to your aching head and upset stomach.
It's the sound of fast relief.
Plop, plop, fizz, fizz. Ooh, what a relief it is. Fast, fast, fast.
Fast Company recently published an interesting article titled, The 10 Most Addictive Sounds in the World. In it, marketing writer Martin Lindstrom states that sounds have a unique ability to make us buy more, want more, dream more, and eat more. He notes, for example, that when the sounds were removed from slot machines in Las Vegas, revenue fell by 24%. So that didn't last long. In his book, Biology, Lindstrom notes that Kellogg's has spent years cultivating a signature crunch sound, even going so far as to hire a Danish lab to design a one-of-a-kind crunch for cornflakes. They wanted kids to be able to hear the difference between the sound of eating generic cornflakes and the Kellogg's brand.
When the sunshine pours from Kellogg's cornflakes, get a sunshine crunch and a sunshine taste. Get a sunshine start to every day. Yes, it's smart to start the Kellogg cornflakes way. Yes, it's smart to start with a sunshine taste.
Recently, Ford created a completely new latch system for their Taurus model, just so it would make a recognizable vault-like sound when the doors closed. All to persuade you that you are secure. The new Nissan Leaf had to deal with a different issue, namely that electric cars make no sound, which can be problematic for seeing and hearing impaired pedestrians. The Leaf needed audio visibility. So in a four-year international study, Nissan consulted acoustic experts, universities, a Hollywood sound company, and the National Federation for the Blind to test for the most appropriate sound. 100 were developed, and from that list, this sound was chosen for going forward. And this sound was chosen when moving in reverse. It's interesting to me that Nissan chose a sound that was futuristic. It not only solved the problem of the electric car's audio visibility, but it also created the impression of leading technology. Choosing sound is a delicate process. The sound a can of Pringles potato chips makes when it's opened is engineered specifically to make you associate the product with lip-smacking freshness. At McDonald's, even the scratchy punching sound your straw makes when it penetrates the plastic lid is created specifically to make you crave an ice-cold Coke and a large fry. Many advertisers use mnemonics to create audio branding. To define the term mnemonic, we've asked our own Steve Gardner. Steve?
Thanks, Terry. The word mnemonic comes from the Greek word mnemon, meaning mindful and relating to memory. It is spelled M-N-E-M-O-N-I-C. Considering it's a word about remembering, it's ironic that the spelling is almost impossible to remember. The definition of a mnemonic is a device such as a pattern of letters, ideas, or associations that assists in remembering something. A mnemonic device is a mind memory and/or learning aid. Commonly, mnemonics are verbal, but may be visual, kinesthetic, or auditory. Terry?
Thanks, Steve. The use of audio mnemonics goes back a long way. Avon used a mnemonic for years in their advertising. The Avon doorbell was an inviting sound, and it captured the essence of Avon, which was a door-to-door sales strategy. It began as a company in 1886, and because so many customers were rural at that time, Avon salespeople had to travel to reach them. By 1954, sales had reached $55 million, and the famous Avon calling campaign was launched. The doorbell mnemonic had two tasks: one, to brand Avon commercials, and two, to persuade women to welcome Avon reps into their homes when they heard their own doorbells ring.
Your Avon representative will be calling soon to show you Avon's new lipstick deluxe and other makeup news. Do welcome her. Avon calling.
Nokia uses a very familiar mnemonic. It is a musical phrase taken from a composition called Grand Vals by the Spanish classical composer Francisco Tárrega, written in 1902. The phrase is taken from bars 13 to 16. The Nokia mnemonic is heard an estimated 1.8 billion times a day, which means it's played more than 20,000 times per second, reinforcing Nokia's dominance in the mobile phone category. Recognize this sound? It's the startup sound on all Apple computers. It was created by Jim Reeks, and he named it Sosumi. In the early days of Macs, he was charged with composing a startup sound. He knew the sound would be heard frequently, and since the early Macs would crash often, he didn't want the sound to become annoying. Instead, he wanted a sound that was, quote, zen, calm, and like a palate cleanser. In other words, Apple wanted that sound to persuade you that booting up your Mac is always the start of a pleasurable experience. Reeks created it using a C major chord that incorporated a lot of rich textures in it, including strings and guitars. At the time, the Beatles were suing Apple for infringement on their name. As a result, Apple computers had to be very careful that it didn't venture into any musical territory, a legal issue that wasn't solved until recently, by the way. So when Reeks developed the Apple startup sound, he wanted to call it the Apple Chime. But the Apple computer lawyers were against it, saying that the word chime was too musical and would risk another lawsuit from the Beatles. So Reeks then said, let's call it Let It Beep, as a sarcastic take on the Beatles' Let It Be song, which further annoyed the lawyers. So then Reeks just said, so sue me. And that is the name of the Apple startup sound, so sue me, spelled S-O-S-U-M-I. It's remarkable how much we rely on our sense of hearing. It truly is our 24-hour warning system, staying on duty tirelessly, scanning relentlessly even as we sleep, even as we dream. It may be the one sense that helped us survive our caveman days. As a creator of sound, I find it interesting that whenever I want to create a peaceful, inviting soundscape, I choose this sound. There is a reason for that. Going back to caveman days, as a matter of fact. If birds are singing, you know everything is all right. Nothing predatory is sneaking through the underbrush. And that's what makes sound such a persuasive selling tool. It makes it possible to see clean glassware on radio, to listen around corners, smell coffee while looking at a TV screen, make our mouths water, and conjure up images of a brand when no other information is present. It can even give a silent car audio visibility, and give us the feeling of calmness when starting our computers without once raising the ire of the world's most famous rock band. That's the amazing thing about sound. It can speak to us on so many levels in the Age of Persuasion.
The Age of Persuasion is written by Terry O'Reilly, who still answers his door every time he hears the Intel chime. Engineer Keith Ullman, who claims to have created the second plop in Plop Plop Fizz Fizz.
So sue me.
Title theme by Ari Posner and Ian Lefevre, who smashed all their instruments after creating the AOP theme, then remembered they were rentals. Download the podcast on iTunes and follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The AOP series was created by Mike Tennant and Terry O'Reilly and is produced by Pirate Toronto and New York.
Looking for more CBC podcasts? Go to cbc.ca/podcasting.